Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
Discuss, challenge, inform, comment, viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests. Viewpoint.
It is Tuesday, the 23rd of September. We are back. Welcome to Viewpoint with myself, Giles Brown, Talk Radio Europe's current affairs discussion show with a panel of invited guests discussing the issues of the day. We were off during the summer recess, and obviously I was off for a couple of weeks as well, but back from the dead and better than ever. There's so much to catch up on. We will be looking at the situation in Spain at the moment, giving you an update if you've missed your Spanish news, as Pedro Sanchez, again, making friends wherever he may go. Also looking at the situation, obviously, in the States after the assassination of Charlie Kirk. Also looking at the UK as well. The large rallies held in London over the past, what was it, weekend before last. If you've got the thoughts on that or anything else, then these are indeed the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
But first off, let's have a look at the front pages. The front pages of the papers this morning, sponsored by our friends at Miquelchon.
Great savings on all Nesson products at Miquelchon. Up to 24 months interest-free. No hidden fees. Proud sponsors of the international news headlines on TRE. Miquelchon, for a great night's sleep.
Yes, indeed. So those front pages. The Guardian says that Nigel Farage is facing cross-party condemnation for his proposals to deport some legal migrants if Reform UK wins the next election. The iPaper calls the idea both radical and sketchy. Well, the Daily Mirror labels it disastrous. The Times says that European sources have dismissed any prospect of downgrading the status of EU nationals who are resident in Britain and were given rights by the post-Brexit treaty. One diplomat asks, why would we agree to make EU nationals worse off than they are now? The Sun's editorial accepts there are some unanswered questions about the plans, but said it's likely to prove popular with voters and that the government must wake up to the issues Reform is highlighting. The Times says health officials in the UK have reassured pregnant women that paracetamol is safe to take after US President Donald Trump said it was not good and linked to autism. The paper says scientists were dismayed by his comments and have pointed to a body of evidence refuting any link. Daily Telegraph says British experts condemned fear-mongering. The Daily Mail asks how the royal family can continue to, their words, indulge the Duchess of York after charities cut ties with her because of her links to Jeffrey Epstein. Its headline reads, will the King now banish Fergie? The Times sets out how one by one charities left the Duchess behind yesterday. It says what started as a trickle at lunchtime led to the dam bursting at tea time. The Mirror says Sarah Ferguson's life in the public eye now lies in tatters. Telegraph leads with a call from a think tank with close ties to the government for Chancellor Rachel Reeves to cut national insurance and increase income tax in the budget. The paper says the Resolution Foundation has often been the petri dish of Labour policy in recent years, and that the Treasury is packed with its former staff. It calls the idea a £6 billion raid on pensioners, landlords and the self-employed. So, from the top of those headlines, the iPaper, new Farage plan to deport migrants would split families who live in Britain. Meanwhile, the Times, Farage faces questions on migrant benefit sums. The Guardian, outrage. as Farage threatens mass deportation of legal immigrants. Meanwhile, the Mirror leads with a different story, but still Nigel Farage. Farage's disastrous plan, the NHS wrecker, they call him. They say that thousands of crucial health staff would face deportation under his plans. The Daily Mail, they lead with new crisis for the palace. Will the king now banish Fernie? And a very unflattering picture of the Duchess of York on the front. Yes, I know. Meanwhile, the Daily Telegraph has Joanna Lumley and Jennifer Saunders. Absolutely fabulous. Reeves told to launch tax raid on pensioners is theirs. Financial Times, they have NVIDIA pleased for $100 billion deal to take big open AI stake. And also got a story on Christian Horner, the former Red Bull boss, getting a £80 million settlement, they reckon. Nice work if you can get it. The Sun, they are looking at the case of Madeleine McCann, and they say, Bruckner, I can solve scandal of the century. They say that Christian Bruckner's reported remark, he can solve the scandal, is saying that he's never been charged with any crime in relation to the McCann case and denies any involvement. The Metro, Kia, we just need to say yes. That's the Prime Minister defending the expansion to Gatwick. Daily Express, they lead on, we must make dementia an NHS priority. And finally, the Daily Star leads with taken for a ride with a bet industry chief executive telling the paper the Chancellor's new tax on gambling will drive punters to shady bookies. And those, for better or worse, are your headlines on this Tuesday, the 23rd of September.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Okay, if you want to get involved, I've got a poll as well. We've got a poll running on the Facebook group, Talk Radio Europe Official. I'm just asking because we will come to this perhaps later on. I'm just thinking if Charlie Kirk's murder is a turning point in Trump's presidency. If you want to get your viewpoint on that or just want to vote on it, obviously go to Talk Radio Europe Official and you will see the poll sitting there now. Delighted to say that I'm joined in live in the studio. Claudio De La Torre is on his way as we speak, speeding towards us. He'll be with us in about 20 minutes, all things being equal. But Andres Gallardo joins us. Andres, that's you, by the way. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Giles. It's been a while, hasn't it?
It has indeed.
What kind of holidays do you get? Well, you know, I mean, it's unbelievable. You work less than Parliament.
Almost like a Spanish politician or a Spanish, absolutely. A Spanish school child.
I've decided that from now on I'm going to call you my supreme friend.
Supreme friend.
Yes. That comes from the Sarah Ferguson email to Epstein, calling him a supreme friend. And I thought, I've never heard that before. Have you heard that before? Well, as a good friend, dear friend.
Supreme leader, supreme being.
But supreme friend.
Barry Wright, I love
anyway,
supreme.
Giles, you're my supreme friend.
I think
today.
It would sound better in Spanish.
Amigo Supremo.
Yes. Or, you know, or El Supremo.
It just sounds ridiculous. That's what I'm trying to say.
But, I mean,
if I read an email, someone calling me a supreme friend, I would say, what the hell does he want?
I think it was a chat bot. I think it was something, you know, somebody, you know, saying, and by the way, send me your bank details.
Yeah. Or you have inherited $40 million or something, yeah.
Almost like Christian Horner leaving the Formula One Red Bull team with £80 million.
Nice little payout.
If you can guess it, yes,
but
indeed.
The Formula One moves an awful lot of money, huh? It's incredible.
Understatement of the century. Now, how was your summer, by the way?
Summer was good. Summer was good. Well, I mean, just summers, I stayed here in the Costa del Sol. it's quite hard because it's the influx of people during the summer months is incredible. So it makes life a little bit more difficult.
How do you sort of sell the Costa d'Or or wherever you are when it's full of people? If you're sharing, you know, a luxury apartment villa and you can't move because the traffic's like, you know, ridiculous.
I always wondered that. I said, why would people come on holiday here during July and August when it's so full and you cannot enjoy the, you know,
the lifestyle,
really, because you're stuck in the car all the time in traffic. But nevertheless, it's a good time. There's good parties and gatherings, and people on holiday are relaxed. So it's nice. For people living here, it's a little bit more difficult because the supermarket is full, the restaurants are full, the roads are, you know, parking, you can't park anywhere. So it's a little bit more difficult, but there's nothing wrong with staying at home.
But once again, it showed the importance of tourism, of visitors in the Spanish, in the Spanish economy. I mean, despite,
of course,
you know.
There were some figures released the other day. Apparently, we are going to have by the end of the year more visitors than ever. But one of the figures that attracted my attention was the amount of expenditure of the tourists visiting has declined. So we get more people, but they're spending less money. So, if you put that in a cocktail mix, that's not a good mix, really, because there's obviously more stress on the services, whether it's roads and everything else, and you're making less money because they're spending less money on a day-to-day basis. So, changing. Also, another thing that the figures showed is that people stay less time. Where people might spend a week or 10 days, now they reduce the amount of time because of prices of hotels and prices of food out. Because people will eat outside and everything, and everything's so expensive now that people reduce the amount of time on holiday.
It's interesting to say that, because at the beginning of the season, I was watching Canal Sur, like Andalucía Directo was one of those programs on Canal Sur, and they were down in the Costa de la Luz, and families were saying that they can only now come for 4 or 5 days because they can't get the apartments that they used to get to be able to rent because of this whole situation that has developed. Some of it coming out of obviously central government, because they're saying, oh well, these, you know, here come these foreign investors buying apartments and speculating, but actually it's hitting middle class,
but it's hitting everyone. Yeah. I mean, it happened to me. I last year I went to Costa de la Luz for 4 days to a nice hotel. This year I reduced it to 3 days because the same hotel was that much more expensive. In order to spend the same amount of money, I had to reduce the time spent there. So that's happening everywhere, I guess. You know, I mean, prices are, you know, inflation is hitting everyone, and we have to adapt to the situation and to the prices that we can afford or we cannot afford. So that's the way it is. The important thing is that the industry is still strong. Also in the figures show that we are still, the tourist industry still represents about 13% of the GDP in Spain, which is massive. Mm. So we seem to be doing well selling that product around the world, especially in Europe, and people still come visiting us and enjoying what we have to offer, which is quite a lot, actually. If you think of all the things that Spain can offer, it's not only the beach and the sea and the weather, but all the things as well. You've got now a lot of cultural offer in terms of concerts and festivals, and you know, the gastronomic tourism is growing and growing. We have a product that we sell, and we seem to be doing that well.
And of course, sports tourism as well. Not only have we had not just on the Costa Circle, we had the Davis Cup and then a paddle tournament as well recently.
But there's another tournament as well starting next week with juniors and everything. There's a lot of on offer. It's not just if you look back to the 70s and 80s, where all you could do just go to the beach for a few days and just, you know, hang around a jug of sangria.
The 80s, that was my 80s, yeah.
Now this is, we've diversified the offer, and people are taking it and embracing it.
In terms of what this means for the Spanish economy, what about, I mean, do you know anything about the sort of labour contracts? Is it still sort of semi-permanent labour contracts if you're a waiter, or are you going to work in somewhere over the season? Has that become more difficult?
This has changed because contracts now have to be indefinite. But it's businesses can lay you off
during a time when they're quiet, but then they have to take you back on when they're busy again. The contract is called indefinite discontinued or something like that. I wouldn't know how to translate it, really.
Yeah.
I'll say it in Spanish for those listeners who
probably speak
it's a fijo discontinuo. So you are a permanent contract, but they can sort of lay you off for a
without
time when it's quiet. Which means that it gives more security to the worker, the fact that they know that the job is there, and during a period of time they might be at home, still getting paid, subsidized by the state, but then they know that when it gets busy they get hired again. They don't have to go through the process of finding another job and everything else, which is not ideal, but it's an improvement of what we had before.
Interesting indeed. 952 78 4000. If you want to get involved with the conversation, or you can email me at studio@tre.radio. So, was it a summer of discontent? I mean, Spain sort of shuts down generally. What of the
The main story in the summer, as you all probably know by now, has been the fires. We've had forest fires in the west of Spain, north and central Spain. Devastating fires. They call them, I forgot if it's third generation or sixth generation, some kind of generation fires, which are caused by they say climate change, when the temperatures are so high and fires reignite themselves because of the currents and everything else. And they're very, very difficult to control. It's shown that we are not prepared for that kind of wild. When I say wild, it's super wild fires. Mm-hmm. So they'll have to put a lot of investment on prevention of those fires during the winter months, and more ways of tackling those fires when they happen. I mean, with climate change, that's one of the things that I was trying to explain to someone the other day. I mean, I think we've gone past the time where we can prevent climate change. I think climate change is a reality, and we all see it on a daily basis. I think what we have to become good is at adapting to climate change, because we've had torrential rains, we have wildfires, incredible wildfires, devastating very large amounts of forest, and
up in the northwest,
northwest, yeah. Touch wood, we've been lucky in Andalusia. We only had one serious fire here in the Costa de Luz in Tarifa, which was controlled within 24, 48 hours. That was under control. After that, we haven't had that many. I'm saying touch wood, because exactly, it can happen any time. Someone say, oh, you said we didn't have any in Andalusia. But I have to say, in Andalusia, we've had a lot of prevention work done. There is more ways of the reaction time is very, very quick. So when there is a spot of fire, they seem to be controlling it very quickly. So that's a good thing. So adapting to climate change, I think, is key. I mean, the torrential rains that we've had, you know, last year, is going to be a year soon in Valencia, were terrible. So we have to learn that, you know, the waterways have to be cleared, and they have to sort of be prepared for large amounts of water and everything else. All of that prevention work, so we avoid disasters like happened in Valencia last year, on the fires this year, and all of the things. And this is all around the world. It's not only in Spain, but we do have to concentrate on being able to adapt to something that is already here with us, which is, you know, the effects of climate change.
Yeah, indeed. And then I didn't see many things about the drought coming in. I mean, we didn't get many drought. It seems that the reservoirs and everything handled it relatively.
We've been very lucky, because last spring we've had a large amount of rain that they have solved for a time the drought problem, not only down in the south, which was quite quite important, but in the rest of Spain as well. Don't forget the area of Catalonia was really badly hit by a drought, and that seems to have, you know, the levels have gone back to a reasonable amount. So we're not hearing the word drought that often, but you know that changes because you get a year or two or three where, you know, the rainfall drops dramatically, and then we have that problem yet again. So we, and in terms of prevention, we shouldn't forget that the desalination plants have to, you know, sort of produce more water. We've made a lot of advances on that side, especially around here. Has to be done. I mean, we have to be able to produce much more water, you know, from the sea, because at the moment, places like Estepona, they have a 100% production for domestic use, but domestic use is only 20% of the consumption.
Yeah.
Agricultural use is very important, and that's most of where the water goes, and we need that water to keep producing basic goods. So all those industries have to, you know, sort of keep developing, to be able to fight what is upon us, which is the effects of climate change.
And obviously, if you get more people coming down and more urbanisations being built, then you have to, because the current, and I'm using my favourite word, infrastructure, has to be developed to support luxury. Because if you can't turn your top on and you spent $4 million on an apartment, you're going to be a bit upset, aren't you?
Yeah, but the demand for water, it grows all the time, everywhere. It's not only here, you know. Obviously, there's the most construction, more people coming here, more, you know, all that is demand for water. So we have to prevent those problems now, because to try to tackle climate change by, you know, throwing, you know, sort of driving electric cars and all of that, I think, you know, or by renewable energy and all of that, I think we've gone past all that. You know, what I'm trying to say is the damage is done. Now we have to deal with the damage and minimize the effects of the damage. And that's where we should be concentrated on, rather than trying to change something and we're not going to change, because climate change, as I said, is upon us.
Mm. So Congress is back, the Senate's back. I mean, Spanish Parliament is sitting again. What's the? Do they need another week after the school holidays? Finally finish.
Spanish Parliament has come. They've come back. I mean, the government has got the same problem again that they had before. Ever since since the last general election, they haven't got a majority. And they've put together this Frankenstein majority of different parts, different nationalist parties and pro-independence parties and left-wing parties and God knows what parties, to try to get them all to agree to legislate. It's almost an impossible task. And day after day, the government is defeated in Congress because they can't pass the laws that they propose. So that brings the country to a legislative standstill. The other big problem is that we haven't had a budget since 2022.
Yeah.
And that is absolutely crazy. It's not only an obligation of the government to present the budget every year under the Spanish constitution, but it's necessary because how are you going to spend your money and how are you going to collect your money? And, you know, after these years where we had inflation, we have a shift in expenditure in terms of what money has to go into defense, for instance, in investment in industry and infrastructures, the change of prices. So they had an infrastructure prepared for a price. Those prices are not good anymore because they've gone up and now they haven't got the money. There are other things where they need to put money into health, mental health, all of those things that they are planning. They can't do anything because we haven't got a budget. Without a budget, you cannot govern. They told Pedro Sanchez, everyone has told them, look, you need a budget. Otherwise, you're being a prime minister of nothing because you can't govern without a budget. Still, we haven't had a budget. They said this year they're going to present one that will be approved for next year. But now, once you present the budget to Parliament, Parliament has to approve it. And they haven't got the votes to approve it. So we may have a situation where we go to the next general election having had no budget, which is absolutely, I mean, whatever way you look at it, it's impossible. It's not helping the country. It's not helping the people, not helping the industry. It's not helping basic needs like especially health, which I'm very strongly advocating for obvious reasons, advocating for a better health system and investment into health, a health system, which is really, really good, but it's underfunded. There's nothing we can do. Then there is the issue of defence, you know. I'm personally against any more expenditure on defence. I said it many times.
You
I think
indeed.
It's a waste of money, totally. But nevertheless, you know, it seems to be there is an international agreement that more money has to go into defence. Okay, fine. But we can't do it because we haven't got a budget. I mean, what don't the government understand about not having a budget? They can't. They are, you know, with their hands tied. And that this is something that it needs to be looked at because it will be unheard of a whole parliament without a budget going to a new election, you know. I mean, most governments, if they cannot approve the budget, they call a general election.
Yeah.
That's what happens. You know, you can't, you know, it happened here in Andalusia when the local government couldn't approve the budget because Vox wouldn't help the PP to approve it. The guy called for an election and he wanted a majority and then he approved the budget and away he went an absolute majority in the regional parliament. So that's what you do. You can't approve the budget. You call the election. That hasn't happened. I mean, Sanchez is so in love with his chair and his position as a prime minister. He doesn't want to lose it. But you don't go into public office just to show that you're the prime minister. You're in public service. You have to be. You're there to do things, just to show that you are the prime minister.
But one of the problems, obviously, and as you've covered several points, and thanks for that. But one of the problems is, for example, we're talking about Andalusia because we're sitting here now. Perhaps it's a little easier to call an election because you don't have the People's Popular Front of Jerez saying, we want our independence. Well, with the Spanish, you know, state as a whole, we've suddenly, you know, we've now gone from, you know, 50 years of democracy or whatever, but we have these, he's trying to keep these coalitions and parties together, and it's a real sort of quilt.
As I said before, it's like a Frankenstein put together type of coalition. It's crazy. And I, for one, I'm not in favour of these parties. They call for an election every other day, you know. I mean, I really believe there is an election. You have to run the course of what you've been voted for. You know, if it's 4 years in Spain, 5 years in the UK, whatever time it is that you've been voted in, you have to run it. But you can't do it without a budget. It's as simple as that. You can't do it without a budget. So the country's paralyzed because of that. And we need to move forward and move on. There's a lot of legislation that has to pass through Parliament, and that is not happening. There's a lot of things that they're not happening. Luckily, we're resilient people, I guess, and businesses continue to work, and we continue, you know, the country's doing well. There is growth in the economy, which is a good thing. Not thanks to the government, but thanks to the people in the country, which I congratulate everyone that carries on working and working hard and making things happen despite the government.
In the meantime, the Partido Popular seems to be very, very quiet. I mean, you would think that they would be absolutely attacking, not because it's got down to the personal attacks again, isn't it? You know, your wife did that, well, your husband said that, and so, rather than saying, why haven't we got a budget? Why aren't we looking at the policies rather than the personalities?
The PP, which is in the opposition party, the main opposition party, because you've got Vox on the other side as well, they've got an open goal and they kick the ball out. It's unbelievable, you know. I mean, they do it week after week. They are a terrible opposition. They have been focusing on the corruption scandals that we've had. The Socialist Party has had so many in recent months. Well, I would say it's going on years now. But they are quite big corruption scandals that affect the Prime Minister and his closest allies, including his wife, his brother, his number two in the party, one after the other. So, I mean, the guy has got an eye for appointing number two.
Air Europa, is it? So is this the Air Europa deal? Is this something?
No, the two closest allies, I mean, the number twos of the party was the minister. The first corruption scandal they came out with was to do with PPE.
Right.
And all the commissions that they were taking and so on. But this has been a snowball, and there is all sorts of corruption scandals now with public works like roads and the train rails and everything, where they were taking commissions, and there were, you know, I mean, apparently there's evidence of all of these monies in exchanging hands. There is audio recordings, which the court has now proved that they are real recordings, because they were saying they were AI generated and all of that. And the proof, you know, has been proven that they are. So these corruption scandals are then not helping the government. Then you've got the fact that Pedro Sanchez's wife was using her position to develop her own private business and using resources of the state to develop her own business. That's another accusation that is in court at the moment. You've got his brother, who was appointed to have a job in one of the diputaciones, which is like a regional government, call it, where he got this job appointed. I mean, all of these doesn't look good for a party. They went to the election saying we are, against the government of Rajoy, the previous government, saying we're going to finish with the corruption that, tainted the previous government. And they said, we are the new breed, they're going to come here corruption free and everything else. And it's one after the other. It's just unbelievable how many corruption cases they've got against them. And the PP have been focusing on that, but that doesn't help the people. You know, I mean, to say, oh, you're really bad, you're corrupt, you know, and everything else, especially coming from a party who's been full of corruption in the past, you know, I mean, they've got an opportunity here to propose, you know, changes in key areas, like I mentioned before, in health, in how to spend money and how to budget better, these and that and the other. They've got an opportunity to present people how to improve the reform of the administration. We're crying out for a reform of the administration, but nobody's brave enough to do it. And they just hide behind the corruption scandals to get popular support. It's working to a certain extent, but not as crazily as you would think, because if you look at the polls, you still got the Socialist Party would get about 107, 108 seats.
Right.
After all the corruption scandals, you would think they wouldn't get any, but there's still some kind of support for that, which leads me to believe that the opposition have got an empty goal and they kick the ball out, because they got a great opportunity to, you know, sort of increase the intention of vote towards them, and they're not doing it.
It's really interesting, isn't it? Because if you look at 20 years ago when we had the huge rallies in Madrid and Podemos started, it was going to be the new way, and Ciudadanos started, and these were going to be the new political parties. You remember those scenes of, you know, young people in the streets? It all fell apart, and now we seem to have gone back to, oh, well, politicians are only... There's a general sort of kind of apathy for, I suppose.
Yeah, there was a time where there was, there was a movement to renew the politics and the politicians. There were new faces that came to play. You had, on one side, you had Ciudadanos, a liberal centre party with new people, mostly young, and with wanting to do things, you know. That worked for a while. Problem with it, then you had Podemos, which were the left-wing option, you know, more radical, more communist. They wanted to nationalize the banking system. They wanted to do, like, crazy things. And that didn't work. The center one, the liberal ones, they could have done well, but they they weren't rooted in every town and every village in Spain, where the old parties, they are very well rooted in every town and every city in Spain. And so they continue to have an element of support, almost like a football team support, you know.
Because yeah, if you're living in some little village in, you know, in Castilla La Mancha, you're not going to do Ciudadanos or Heaven for Fenn.
Yeah,
Podemos,
you might be attracted by the headline. You might be attracted by some speech that the guy does, you know, on TV and everything. He said, "Oh, I like this guy. I'm going to vote for him." But that doesn't have more legs than one vote, maybe, in one election, you know, maybe a local election or maybe a regional election. But it doesn't have the legs to be sustained in time, to be able to create a force that then get rooted into the towns and the cities and the people. Where the old parties, they've been there forever, they do have that rooted support in the towns and cities, you know. So that's why that's all fizzled out, and we've gone back to the old politics of the, you know, the right wing and left wing, you know, the Socialist Party and the Conservative Party, and we're stuck in that. Now, we still have a little bit of the Podemos thing that now called Sumar, and they are arguing with Podemos, and you know, they're fizzling out. They themselves are shooting themselves in the foot, not moving forward and not creating a real left-wing base able to take votes from the Socialist Party. And on the other side, we got Vox, which are, you know, riding on the international wave of anti-immigration and populist sort of policies, which are can resume into one, which is anti-immigration.
Mm. Going to take a quick break and then I'll get back with more Viewpoint.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Always live, the back for the season, methinks. If you want to get involved with this morning's show, these are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952 78 4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Very cordial in here. There was shaking of hands as Claudia De Torre enters the building. Claudia, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you very much.
You look like you just look like you stepped off a tennis court or something. You look very.
I haven't.
Have you?
I've been playing with Djokovic.
Have you?
Yeah.
I was trying to improve his baseline game. Is he?
Indeed. Yeah. Indeed.
We were just talking about the Spanish economy and tax and the fact that Spain is a mature market, but you can't get anything done, and Spain is basically doing well despite the government. I'm going to come to that in a second, but I've got some WhatsApps coming in here that says, Sheila, good morning. With extensive heat, there will be more evaporation, says Waterwise, which is that has to be taken into account. Dennis has got some other business saying, could you tell me what's happened to Sharon from Alicante? I have no idea, but he always enjoyed listening to her. And yes, indeed, good morning to Gary, saying you've got lots of material to talk about. Yes, indeed we have, and that's why we're here. And if you want to get involved with the show, 952-78-4000 is the phone number. Studio at tre.radio is the email. A Facebook page is Talk Radio Europe Official, and I've got a post up there we're talking about, which will come on to the, we'll come perhaps onto that in the second half of the show, because we've got, 15 minutes or so this first one. I'm looking to see if you think that the, we'll talk about it in the second half, about the murder of Charlie Kirk. Could it mark a turning point in the US presidency? We'll come on to that in the second half, along with other things. At the moment, 100% if you think no. So please go to the Facebook page. We've got the poll up and running. We were talking about, myself and Andres, we're talking about the fact there's no budget in Spain at the moment. Politicians are back. It's fractured in terms of the political party. Everybody seems to be doing deals. When you talk about the health service, you know, because that's controlled mainly by the autonomous regions, am I correct in that?
Yes, they are, yes.
Right. So, and everybody goes on about how wonderful it is, and how, you know, as compared to the UK, you can go in there and you can be, you know, you can be in and out in a matter of days, rather than like the 18-year waiting list in the UK, apparently. Isn't there the problem that perhaps Spain might go, oh, well, we've got the best health service in the world? Because this is what happened with the NHS, of course. course, in the UK. And then everybody was slapping each other on the back so much, but they didn't put the investment in, which is badly needed. It's going to continue. And again, you need to put the infrastructure in if you're going to attract businesses, et cetera, et cetera. Claudia, any thoughts on that? Or do you think Sanchez will manage to weather out his summer of discontent and is now ready to lead the party through to the sunny uplands of a new Spain in 2026? That woke you
up. It's a very complicated situation because there's a complete gridlock. And of course, as you said, there's been no budget for several years. And now there's infighting between Sanchez's allies. So he's caught up between Pablo Iglesias and Puigdemont. He has no real majority. Like he keeps losing important votes in parliament, and laws keep getting pushed back because, of course, it's very difficult to get all these small parties, minority parties, to agree, especially on things like immigration. Like Puigdemont wanted Sanchez to give him power on immigration, like devolution on immigration to Catalonia, yeah.
So Catalonia would have its own immigration policy.
Immigration policies. And that was, of course, Sanchez, again, was willing to give that to Puigdemont in order to keep him happy and to stay in power. But Podemos said, no, we're not having it. And it's been trashed by them. I was reading the press and they were saying Sanchez now, he's a lot more fearful of Pablo Iglesias than of Puigdemont, basically, because Pablo Iglesias is the one who's being most tough on him, and they fear that he kind of wants to get revenge on Yolanda Díaz, which is the vice president that he appointed. So it's all this infighting between the Spanish left, and Sanchez is in between that.
And for those who don't know who Pablo Iglesias is, just a quick...
Pablo Iglesias is the former vice president of the political party Podemos, which is considered of the far left, and he left government. He was there during the pandemic the first year, and then he left government. And they split. They were all in a group, all the minority left, to the left of the Socialist Party. They were in a group called Sumar. And Pablo Iglesias appointed Yolanda Díaz as the deputy prime minister, and she stayed. And then Podemos separated from Sumar, and they left the parliamentary group, and now they're by themselves, and they have four votes, four seats. But those four seats are absolutely decisive. So basically, if Pedro Sanchez wants to get any law get through, he needs to the votes of the Basque separatists, the Catalan separatists, plus Podemos, plus Sumar. So if he doesn't get all those small minority parties, he can't get any law passed. So basically, he's been trying to juggle and appease one and appease the other. But of course, it's very difficult to make everyone happy, especially when you have Junts, which is the right-wing Catalan traditional party, and Podemos, that has Marxist ideas, and Bildu, which is the separatist.
Frankenstein.
Exactly.
Frankenstein, yeah. Totally.
Totally. So you have all these small parties, which any law, any important law, needs half plus one, and an outright majority to go through parliament. So we're seeing how Sanchez keeps losing votes.
Because you only need one of these actors to say no, and they don't pass the law. They lose the vote in parliament.
I mean,
so only one. It could be the Marxist left-wing party, could be the conservative Catalans, could be, any of those say no, and that's it. We're not, just back to the drawing room.
It's really interesting because is this sort of like a hangover? Because obviously in the UK, nowhere near this. But is this a sort of hangover as we, you know, 50 years on, you know, from 1975, etc.? But the autonomous regions, the 17 autonomous regions that make up Spain, and obviously these parties have formed because of that you give them the autonomy. And then they want a little bit more. And now you've got this, like I said before, this patchwork of quotes. They're all saying, like, Bildu, for example, they've got an interesting history, shall we say? You know, the Catalan parties. And there's no way...
Well, being an interesting history, you mean being terrorists?
That's why I said.
Okay. All right, well, just call it by what it is.
But do you see what I mean? It's important that these are these small parties that you would never get in the UK having such power. And therefore, we're going to have this... constant sort of...
Completely, absolutely.
You know, unless you get something like gets a sudden brain freeze and votes Vox and goes, right, immigration, let's go back to 1945, basically.
Just calling it like you said, like it should be. Look, Sanchez depends on all of these parties, but mainly the one that he needs to look after the most is the Catalan separatists, the pro-independence parties, because without them, he wouldn't be there, So these guys, the only thing they want is independence of Catalonia. They don't want anything else. They're not interested in Spain. They're not interested in Seville or Badajoz or whatever. All they're interested is in their independence. They can't get the independence, so what they want is more and more devolution to the point where they are, in real terms, independent. So they want immigration. They want the trains. They want the tax office.
The trains. Just trains that don't leave Catalonia. I mean, what do you mean when he...
Well, they
we
want
to change the gauge.
No, well, this is something that they've been complaining because,
airports,
yes, you've got local short-haul trains that operate in Catalonia. Those are fine. They can control that. But there are long-distance trains, you know, so there has to be an element of synchronicity from, you know, for the rest of the country and everything. So all this is a bit ridiculous. And then the final straw is that they want their own tax office. So they want to collect their tax and spend their own tax, and if there's any change, they'll give it to the state. And that's where everyone said, hold on a second. First, we don't have a budget, which I mentioned before a number of times today. But the second thing is that all the other regions are going to say, hold on a second, if you're doing these, we want these as well. But that doesn't work. You know, it doesn't work because there is an element, and it's something very left-wing, of, you know, being able to redistribute the wealth of the country.
The solidarity.
It's called solidarity, you know. And basically, of course, there are regions in Spain where they are not as wealthy as Catalonia. What does that mean? That these people have no right to schools and health and everything else because they're poorer? You know, all your socialist listeners, which you got plenty, will just obviously say, no, of course not, you know. But this is what's happening, and this is what Sanchez is signing up for, to say, look, have your finances, have your money, as long as you keep voting for me and keeping me in power. And that's the disservice that he's doing to the country, is just by being in power.
I've got to do a quick commercial break and then I'll be back with more Viewpoint.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Always lively. The first one of a new season, we hope, joined in the studio by Andres Gallardo and Claudia de Toro. We're trying to work our way through the labyrinthine ways, because obviously a lot of us here, the English speakers amongst you, may not know the ins and outs. In fact, some of the Spanish speakers here don't know the ins and outs of the political system, but it really is. I mean, the thing that really, really worries me is the fact that Spain is going to have this, like I said, this unbroken circle of no confidence votes, of elections that aren't clear, nobody gets a clear majority, and we're sort of got this, we're in this status situation. And if you are looking to invest, if you're hoping, people are all saying, oh, well, we're going to have the digital nomads. Nobody knows what that means. But we've got digital nomads coming in. We want this young, you only have to go to your local bank and it's all full of young people with laptops and et cetera. And the administration isn't there. And if you don't have a clear political vision because they're too busy infighting, you're not going to get that. And that's why you can make these big political pronouncements on the international stage. But the real thing is how much, you know, cost of living crisis, and then they need somewhere to live.
Well, economy is based on confidence. If you are confident that things are going well, you're more likely to invest. Spain at the moment doesn't give an image of confidence, which might be putting some investors off and looking at different places. So it is very important that we have the image and we take the measures that provide confidence to the private markets to come here to Spain. There are a number of industries that they want to relocate within Europe, and they're looking at different locations. I fear that the political temperature in the country is might push them to go elsewhere, and that would be bad, because this is a great country, you know, for any company to come here to invest and everything. But you have to give them a lot of security, a lot of confidence, and this is, I fear, it's not happening. I may be wrong, though, so happy to be corrected if that's the case. But it seems to me that we're not giving that platform for investment to happen with enough security.
Kylie, your thoughts on that? I mean, are we...
I think we do need, like, a strong, stable government that won't keep collapsing. Here we've been lucky that we haven't had that many elections in the last few years, but it's been there's a kind of gridlock. No big reforms can be made. Any important legislation hasn't gone through. We've been lucky that the economic growth has been quite good due to Spain benefiting from a lot of people coming in from abroad to work, digital nomads, tourism, the industry also, due to geopolitical things in Eastern Europe, quite a few things have located here, because Spain is a bit of an island geographically, same as Portugal has benefited from its geographical position. Especially one sees it here in the real estate market, how many people they are from Central and Eastern Europe coming to buy from Poland.
Just to give you an example of what I was trying to say before on a more generic way. The Golden Visa, for instance.
Oh, yes.
The Golden Visa, they stopped the Golden Visa because they were blaming the shortage of property for young people in Spain to the Golden Visa. But the amount of transactions of Golden Visa were very, very low, with minuscule, you know. So that didn't affect. And also, the price range started at $500,000. So that is not going to disrupt the lower end of the market for young Spanish people to access property. At the same time, the message that he's sending is, he said, you've got this incentive where people have gone in good faith to take advantage of the incentive. Not many, as I said, it's a minuscule amount. But then they withdraw it. That doesn't give a stability to the country. That doesn't give a stability to an investor. They might be thinking, well, I'm going to go and invest in Spain because things are good now. But you plant the seed of the doubt on someone thinking, well, in 10 years' time or 5 years' time, they might withdraw all these benefits, or they might, you know, change things that might not benefit my investment, so I'll go elsewhere. That's what I'm trying to say, just to give a platform where people are confident that this is the way forward.
Right, on that one, we're going to the news at the top of the hour. We're back for the second half of Viewpoint. National International News is up next.
Radio Europe.
Your voice in Spain.
Discuss, challenge, inform, comment. Viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests.
Viewpoint.
Always live. Welcome back to the first viewpoint of hopefully the new season with you until 12 o'clock. And then Stephen Ritson is with us to bring his own particular take on the world in general, and especially Europe today. If you want to get involved even with today's show, these are that. I've checked the phone lines. They are working.
To contact TRE, please call 952 78 4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Just want to go, because Jason very kindly sent me in a sentiment. The phones are working, Andres. It's okay.
Yeah,
they're working. You may resume. And by the way, Andres will be representing his own political party after this show. The Equipo A. if you remember that from the 80s.
The Equipo A, yeah.
952-78-4000. We have a caller on the line. So, morning caller, you're live, and welcome back to the first show of the new improved viewpoint. Hang on, I've got a caller on the line. Morning, caller.
Good morning, Giles.
Ah, how are you, my friend? Good morning to you, Alf. Good to have you with us.
Yes, I was trying lots and lots of times, and it was going ringing and then just cutting out. Wow. So
I think it's probably an evil Russian chatbot in that case, or something like that.
You knew it was you.
Well, you've had the magical gnome work in the system, so it works now.
Yes, one of my better purchases over the summer. Good morning,
boys, by the way.
Good morning. We knew it was you, but that's why we didn't pick up.
Good morning, Alf. It's been a while. We miss you here.
Well, thank you very much for saying that.
So, obviously, you heard Andres, and he's now standing for office. So, what are your thoughts on anything that we've covered for the first 60 minutes of this morning's show?
Well, the first one, I mean, I'm always interested because Andres, being in the tourist sector or whatever, is selling houses. You have to understand the tourist sector. What is surprising, and I agree with what he said, you know, lots more people are coming, not as much money being spent. And I think a bit of that is the type of tourist that's coming and what we've... I mean, I live in Benalmadena, so I'm down by Fuengirola Front and 24-hour square and all that. And what you're not seeing is what they were 10 years ago, the hordes of British youngsters throwing money at beer. You don't see that so much now, and you don't see... So there's an older population. A lot more Scandinavians who tend to, by what I see, they'll go to a restaurant and have a meal, but they're not doing all that after stuff. They're not doing all that nightclubby stuff, and they're not doing all that, let's go and spend a night on the beach and see how much we can drink and put into the ocean. I think there's a change in the type of tourists, which is probably why we're getting more. But I mean, Malaga Airport, what was it? Is another record level last month, a record year this year. They're going to be extending the airport again. So there's got to be something in it. And I suppose we look at the direct money coming in, whereas the country is looking at tourism in general. And you're right, I don't know what you said in the end. GDP was, you know, massive, massive for any country, I would imagine. Obviously, the UK's GDP for tourism isn't as big, but that's because we've got lots of other things competing with it. So, well done for saying that, Andreas.
One of the things, Alf, is I'm just thinking, because they've got rid of the Airbnb situation has obviously been clamped down, the tourism places, and that has had an effect on, you know, families rather than this whole sort of people throwing you know, money into the beer, as you said. But also, I mean, historically, the hotel sector in Spain has always been one of the major sort of influences, if you like, you know, in government policy. Yep. You think of those big hotel chains, and obviously it's much easier for the government to keep a track on, you know, these companies and you know, look at Melia, who are expanding on a rapid rate. We're seeing more investment in hotels coming over from Dubai, from Turkey, etc. It's an interesting situation.
But didn't the hotels also, they didn't kill off local trade, but they changed local trade by having it, you know, all inclusive. You go all inclusive. Nobody's going to leave their hotel to walk down to a local bar or a local restaurant or anything, you know, because it's all inclusive. So they sort of change. And I'm saying they overly interfere. They just change the way people come and go on holiday.
But are there that many all inclusive? I don't know. That's what I'm asking.
Oh, well, just wander along the front one day, Andreas, of Torre Molinos, Benalmádena and Fuengirola, and just have a look at almost all of the hotels are all inclusive.
Are they? Okay.
Yeah. Even the ones that never used to be. You go to Holiday World. Christ, I mean, that's a massive complex. It's all inclusive.
But that's because, I mean, we're in a money situation here, so people know what they're going to get because they know when they book their place, they know they're not going to have to spend anything. If it's an all-inclusive...
Yes, but this isn't recent, is it, Giles? This has been going on for, going on for 20 years when they first introduced all-inclusive, and people tend to do it because, especially families with kids, because then they don't have to leave the complex, they don't have to worry about walking down roads that they don't know where they are and stuff like that. So
I've personally never used an all-inclusive. I don't know what it's like. No, I never. So that's why I was asking. I didn't know there were so many.
You can spot the British a mile off. There's nothing green on the buffet. It's always, yeah.
And it's very interesting.
Anyway, that's
good
thing.
We'll get away from you.
The next thing you spoke about, which I think is quite specific, because Andreas is making this big thing about, there's no budget, therefore the country's in... Denmark went how many years? 7-8 years without a budget? They survived, these companies, these countries. And all I'll go is, this is part of the argument, the anti-argument, about proportional representation. In countries where there's proportional representation, you end up with these split governments, and when it gets to the worst end of the scenario about split governments, you end up with countries not being able to agree their budgets or being four people in a government can hold a government to account, whether it's Puigdemont or whoever it is, and for whatever reason. That's just why, some of the proportional representation, I agree with, to be honest, proportional representation, it's the system you use to elect the people in the first place. So, just because you've got, otherwise you could end up, this is the scenario for the UK, in case there's people out there who don't understand it, Farage with, what's he got, four seats?
Four seats at the moment,
Farage could end up blackmailing the UK into all this rubbish that he's talking about now. It just, it could destroy the country. Four people. That's just... So there's... It's how do you find real democracy, real democratic... I mean, the first past the post in the UK isn't that democratic, but I'd sooner have that than
anti-democratic, in my opinion. The first past the post system is, in my opinion, probably the most undemocratic system in Europe, because the voice of so many other people who have voted for a party is suppressed unless they win in that one constituency. So I find that it's not the solution at all. I never said it was the solution.
I disagree with Claudia. I quite like the British system where you elect a guy who will represent you whether you voted for him or not.
Listen, I quite like 32% of the population in the UK gave the Labour Party the biggest government it's ever had. That is not correct. That is not right. It's not fair. And Claudia, you have to agree sometimes with people who go, I live in a constituency. I lived in the People's Republic of Newham. 70% or whatever it was of the people who voted Labour.
Yeah.
But it still meant that 30%, a third of the population, didn't vote Labour. Their voice, unrepresented. Totally unrepresented, I know, because when you lived in the People's Republic, you never had a say in opposition, either locally or London-wide or nationally. So it's how do we find a democratic system where people's views can be aired properly, so that we don't have the two ends. So, like I say, PR creates one problem, first past the post creates another problem, and if we go to the American system, who outside of America would cope with that system? I don't think anybody. Anyway, that's just my view about PR.
Yeah.
the next thing was, which I always find funny, is Andreas. Why would Sanchez call an election? Yes, there may be no budget. Yes, Claudia, you may think that the country's being stifled and whatever, but they still run to a budget. They still have money to spend. And just remember the one single thing in politics that's the most important issue. He is in power. He has the say. Whether he's getting everything he wants is irrelevant. He is in power. People go into politics for power. They don't go into politics to be nice to the... Oh, you didn't vote for me, but I'll still represent you. Of course, they'll pay lip service to that. But at the end of the day, as I've always said, politics is about being in power. If you're not in power, you can't have an influence over government issues and changing the law or anything like that. None whatsoever. At least Sanchez has got a tenth of a chance of achieving some of the things that's in his head. I don't agree with what's going on, and I didn't agree with the way Sanchez retained power. I've always said that. What he did, creating that rubbish with Catalonia so he could stay in power was just nonsense. But it's the system that's there. But you can't expect Sanchez to know, I don't think this is quite fair, so I'm going to give up my power.
Let me...
and we'll call an election in order to sort out the country's woes because we haven't got a budget.
Oh, you've got callers.
We've got calls coming in. Alf, thanks for your call. Calling again. Good to have you with us again, my friend, yep?
Okay, and you.
Thanks very much. Morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Yeah, hi. It's John in Meehan.
Morning, John.
Hi. Just a point on arising what Alf was saying, and he always says things that are sensible, well, almost always. When you were saying about, obviously, that there's percentages of people don't get any say because they didn't get the majority in a constituency. I just give you an example. I sometimes say to people when they complain about MPs in the UK, when did you last phone or speak to your MP? And almost everybody I speak to has never spoken to their MP. And on one occasion, it was a long time ago, the first time I did it, it was that hanging debate in Parliament. And I phoned my MP on the day of the vote to ask how he was going to vote. And I said to him, well, incidentally, how many people have called you out of 100,000 in your constituency? He said, I was the third. So if people don't have a say because they don't bother to contact their MP. If hundreds and thousands of people contacted their local MP, regardless of who they voted for, it would have an effect on Parliament. But if you're silent, they assume you either don't care or you're happy to go along with it.
Exactly, you're doing a good job.
I was probably an exception because I used to contact my local MP when I lived in the UK on a regular basis. Uh-huh. I was probably the only one.
But... Well, I did after I called the first time. But what I'm saying is that I've spoken to lots of people over the years since then. That's, was it, I don't know, 40 years ago or whatever, the no hanging debate. And I can't be found anyone who's ever spoken to their MP. So it's like people's fault, not Parliament.
Exactly. I mean, it's like if you have a vote, use it or lose it, as the saying goes. As always...
Well, voting's no good. Just voting itself doesn't really mean very much because most people, again, unfortunately, don't ever know why, in a good reason, why they voted. It was because my mum and dad did, or because I'm unemployed, or because I went to public school or whatever. But most people do not know why they vote. Hence the reason why you get the Labour Party got in with a massive majority, and within a couple of months, everybody wants to sack them and get somebody else. They didn't know why they voted.
Yeah, and thereby hangs a thread. As always, thank you for your call.
Okay.
Continue back with
us.
952-7847. And Andreas, you're chomping at the bit.
Just a couple, very, very quickly, a couple of points on Alf's comments. In terms of the budget that he seems to think I'm obsessed with it, let me just remind you of two things. The first one is that it's a constitutional mandate to present the budget every year. It doesn't mean that it has to be approved, but the constitution said you have to present it.
Can't the king have a word?
So he's failing to produce a budget, which is a constitutional mandate. That's number one. The number two is that in the last 3 years, which is the years we haven't had a budget, things have changed so dramatically in terms of the economy and how money has to be shifted from one place to another and everything else, that it's untenable not to have a fresh budget to be able to move forward.
Going to go to the lines again. Thank you for holding. Call you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Yes, good morning, Giles. It's Gary here.
Ah, Gary. How are you, my friend? Good to have you with us.
Your finger's twitching already. I can feel it. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning. That's you two, by the way. Say hello to Gary. Glad you.
Hi, Gary. How are you?
Notice my fingers
are...
How
are you going? All right.
Gary, my fingers are away from the faders. They will absolutely...
Are they?
Yes, they are. Final.
Well, I would personally put them above them again. But can I just say, having lived here the amount of time I've lived here... I think Sanchez has done a good job. Now, I'm looking for, especially from COVID onwards, I think he's brilliant. And I think the Spanish should be congratulated for the way they've acted. Other than that little spat he had when he sold out for a little while to the Catalans, independent, is it? But whatever. But our Sanchez, I think he's been all right. He's been a lot better than anyone in the UK for many, many years. Secondly, I've got all my children and my grandchildren lined up here in great anticipation.
That's an awful punishment there, by the way, Gary, to have lined up for listening to me.
Even my wife is slowly smoking on her cheroot and her smoking jacket in anticipation for Alf, who's been banging on for years about the Labour Party, to come on and defend. But there you go, you always get disappointed. Thirdly, perceptions. No one's mentioned the price of flights coming over here, which has gone up, which is one of the effects. Plus, it's the fashion, Ibiza, Yorker, here, blah, 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 where youngsters go. But it's the price of flights which is causing a lot of quietness, shall we say. Well, it all depends where you go. Fuengirola's always jumping. Torremolinos is always jumping. Benamadden has really quietened down the past 8 years or whatever. But then again... If you're around here at Christmas time and see the amount of Irish people, it's not quiet.
Yes.
So, and that's obviously that's down to Brexit. But I was living in New York. I lived in New York for many years, and I was there the first day that the all-inclusive came out in Campastia to the east of Palma. I don't believe El Arenal is there anymore, but I was there when they thought it was a good idea. Everyone thought it was a good idea, and my father explained it to the Spanish businesses that no, it's not going to be a good idea for you because the Brits, being the Brits, like a love a bargain, etc., cheap drink, no matter what label's on it, they'll stay in the hotels. And I'm not going to mention that there was mentioned before, I thought it was unfair mentioning name and names, but this complex along the coast there, again, we explained to a Spanish friend of ours that's Irish-based. I may stand corrected since the conversation, but that's Irish-based, and very little of the income comes direct to Spain, so other than the taxes, etc. But some people's perception is very, very odd. But there you go. But as I say, I think Sanchez has done extremely well. And I will get this in. Charlie Kirk being shot is just an attack on religion. And Jimmy Kimmel, that was a commercial decision. They've done the same with Roseanne Barr many, many years ago, the Democrats, etc. So what's good for the goose is good for the gander.
As always, Gary, you can dismiss your children and your grandchildren now because you have spoken.
Okay, they're smoking cheroots as well, that's not really allowed, is it? One's got a point.
Thanks very much indeed, Gary, for the comments. I'm going to take a quick break and then back with more Viewpoint.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Indeed, if you want to get involved and get your viewpoint across anything, local, national, international, interplanetary, galactic, let me know. These are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
And from Jason. Jason very kindly sent me in on the email a couple of days ago now. He said, "Dear Giles and your panel, instead of calling in, I've sent you a narrative for discussion. I'm infinitely better, a better writer than an orator. When I verbally try to explain things, I get mixed up. There are 50 documented collapses of empires and significant kingdoms in our history. They were often a combination of factors contributing to their demise. Climate, social unrest, rebellion, financial, environmental welfare, warfare, excuse me, natural disasters, political, religious collapse, also unsustainability of an over-complex civilization. AI should lead to massive unemployment. Curiously, all the danger signs of a collapse are visible and unfolding around us all the time." I'm sending you this narrative to digest and contemplate. Jason sees the future. Jason's looking into the future, and I quote, "Global discohesion, the far-right hijacked discontentment of the masses over immigration and migration. Two, authoritarianism, as migration plays into the hands of the far right, as does the far right play into the hands of authoritarianism, control. It would not matter if it was far left. Symptomatic where the opportunity derives from. It's an opportunity for the establishment agenda to exact tighter global control over a populace. AI and technology will hasten this agenda. Authoritarianism leads to totalitarianisms. Or why all of this? Because there are two futures potentially. A total global civilization collapse and resulting partial or total extinction. Not limited to empire. Whole world is connected now. Smarter minds than mine can see this possible global collapse. So attempt to evade it through regaining global control of the population. I believe at the highest level upon echelon of real governance of this planet, both agendas are being pushed, even competing. One seeks to evade collapse by reducing our number to a less impactful number. The other is totalitarianism control to evade a collapse, which I do prefer. Definitely the first. I would rather die a free man, and there's also the opportunity that we could claw our way back from being near smashed into oblivion to make more responsible and better go of it, given a second chance. When a global is constantly exposed to fear, it becomes desensitized, but also more malleable, pliable and susceptible to authoritarian control. Thank you, Giles, to contribute in real time to your show. Quite a few points there, but a lot of isms involved. Authoritarianism, people have been going on about, Gary mentioned it there about the murder of Charlie Kirk, and we had the funeral the other day. 84% of you think at the moment it's not going to be a turning point in Trump's presidency, this murder of this of Charlie Kirk. But people are saying, you know, oh, well, he was killed because he was dealing with the subjects that people don't want to talk about. Trump has obviously signed an executive order saying that Antifa are now a terrorist organization. And, you know, he said at the funeral, you know, where Kirk's widow was saying, you know, forgiving your enemies, and Trump said, "I'm not forgiving them. I hate them." So with the operations of ICE, you know, who have been taking, obviously raiding a Samsung factory, of course, a couple of weeks ago, and also, you know, picking up people and they're ending up in El Salvador, you know, which is not a weekend destination. Do you think with this sort of, and you know, Kimmel being taken off Aries back on today, people going, "Oh, it's a dictatorship, it's authoritarian." We know it's 1984. You're looking at me quizzically, both of you. Do you think that the MAGA crowd, Trump's crowd, are going to come down even harder? You know, it's free speech and not hate speech, et cetera, et cetera. Or go on, take a deep breath, Andres.
Trump, I said it here before, this is like a five-year-old with a loaded gun in a room full of people. You know, anything can happen when he's around. In terms of free speech, he doesn't like anyone that contradicts him. Or you know, I mean, if you get some figures from the employment office in the United States that's saying that employment has gone up, he hates the person, the head of the department, and he thinks that it's all, you know, manipulated and everything. Anything that it goes against him, he just doesn't, you know, accept it, you know. It's totalitarian. I mean, there is an element of weight there. Like, you got this judiciary, you got you got Senate and Congress there, but still on, you know, Republican. So, but that may change midterm and everything else. So,
It's still a democracy, and there's some elements of democracy that are controlling the situation.
I mean, people are talking about, like, you know, with this the rally a couple of weeks ago in the UK, 150,000 people, they reckon. You know, people saying, you know, the UK is worse than North Korea. Now, we're sitting in Spain, and if you want to know what's like under an authoritarian regime, I suggest we get in the time machine and go back to about 1951, 52, and see things that really was an interesting time to be challenging the state.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, we know all about dictators. There was no press, no free press. There was no political parties. You couldn't criticize the regime. All of those things. That is just like, you know, we know what the dictatorship is like. And that's not what I see in America. Yeah, I mean, look, Sanchez, friend of Gary, which I celebrate that he likes him. Listen, yeah, this is democracy.
Got a I mean,
if there was an election tomorrow, Sanchez would get 108 seats in Parliament, you know, so there's still a lot of people who support Sanchez, and good for them, you know, I don't, but they do. So that's democracy. So that's the, you know, that's the point. So that, I've lost my line of thought there.
Claudio is pontificating. Should we move on from this subject? Because I think, you know, Spain's going to, if you look at the way that Spain had moved from 1970 to 2025, you wouldn't have seen it sort of, I mean, things had to change. But if you look at the situation we're in now, I just find it very interesting when people go, oh, well, you know, it was better back in the 50s or whatever, because it wasn't better back then.
I just think that in general, in most countries, people feel they don't have a voice because they just vote and then they'll do whatever they want. So it seems that your vote doesn't really matter because most pledges are broken. They say one thing, then they do the other. So it seems that people feel that they have no faith in democracy and in the system anymore because they just think, well, what's the point of voting? They're going to do what they want anyway. Our voices are unheard. I think a lot of people just don't feel represented. They don't feel that government works for them, especially the youth. More and more young people don't believe in democracy as such because they think, well, the system has failed us completely. We can't get a house. The cost of living is so high. Taxes are too high. So it's just a huge... People are more and more disconnected and feel more that just the system isn't working for them. So it's this anger that's led to many populist movements in different countries because they just feel that they'll just vote for anything that's not. It's like I always say, like in the UK, that both Labour and Conservatives have failed Britain massively on many things, you know. They really have failed Britain when you see that people's household wealth has gone down, inflation is high, people feel that they can't have families anymore, birth rates are going down because raising a family is very expensive, then you have all these identity crises, etc., etc. So I just think that unless... I think that's the whole thing with the Brexit. It all started with Brexit, that people felt that the European Union wasn't democratic, that they weren't, it was just an unelected body, that they were doing what they wanted with taxpayers' money. But I just feel that nothing has changed ever since. Also in Europe, there's or in France, the same, people are very upset with the system. We're seeing how it's crumbling down, governments are falling, lasting very little time, there's huge instability. Nothing, there's this whole gridlock, no reforms can go through, nothing is getting done, you know, that there's, politics is completely frozen all across Europe, that no major changes can be done, it's ungovernable in many countries, they just don't seem to get anything done. I think that's the problem, when there needs to be a reform, for example, France is a perfect example, just... it's stagnant because things aren't just getting done. There's no political kind of impetus to say, okay, there's this problem, let's do something about it. So, of course, it's normal that people feel angry. People are disillusioned. They say, well, the traditional parties, the traditional like conservatives or socialists, they feel that they do very similar policies. Like, for example, I know many Labour people and supporters in the UK who they feel that Keir Starmer is like a blue Tory, mm-hmm. a red Tory. And that he's doing very similar policies than the Conservatives and austerity. So they think, well, why am I going to vote for... I wouldn't vote for Keir Starmer again. Of course, they did vote for him because they were fed up of 14 years of Conservatives who did a terrible job on many aspects. But no one's kind of illusioned with them anymore. And people on the other side, Conservative people, feel that the Tories have failed them. And in 14 years, they didn't really deliver for them. So now they'd vote for reform in hope that maybe they'd do something radically different. So I think that's... part of the problem also. Yeah,
and my fear is that if reform gets to power, they will be disillusioned again.
Of course.
Because, as I said before, Farage had his time when the campaign to exit the EU. He was one of the leaders, if not the most vocal of all of them. He promised so many things by coming out of the EU, we'll control our borders, we'll have more money for the NHS, we'll have all of those things that he promised on the populist style that characterizes him. And the result has been that open borders, no money for the NHS, the country's, you know, performing economically badly, with very little growth or no growth, and all of those things. And I think, well, Farage has had his time. He had his opportunity to deliver something, you know, and like any populist politician presents very complex problems with one simple solution, and that doesn't exist.
Stop the boats. Now the thing is, and I don't know how this operates for the Spanish thing, but what with the having seen the scenes of the rally in London a couple of weeks ago, 150,000 people, maybe more, this whole thing, we want our country back, yeah, which was the Brexit thing as well. It's the migration. What seems to have happened, though, is that the traditional parties, i.e. Labour, all the Conservatives, are not taking on reform and saying, actually, migration, I mean, we Europeans, look, we're sitting here, and migration is a positive thing. It brings so much, as well as, the whole situation. So it's not that, and instead they are trying to be more saying, oh, yes, we agree that, migration is a problem, so we're going to try and be tougher than you guys are. And by that, you end up with people voting for the party you're trying to get up against.
Look, early in the programme, I said, look, stop fighting climate change. That is a reality now. What we have to do is try to fight the consequences of climate change by preparing ourselves for situations that, may occur, like, torrential rain, forest fires, all of those things. With immigration, it's the same thing. Everyone has been trying for years to stop migration. That hasn't happened. It's there. They're not going to stop by sending one migrant back to France and every fortnight is going to solve the problem. So what we need to look at now is to see how we accommodate this situation so it works for everyone.
952-78-4000. Morning, caller. Thank you for holding. You're live on Thierry. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Yeah, it's Johnny Meehas again.
Yes, John.
I'm sorry if I missed the last couple of bits, but since you chatted, I've just written to headquarters. Since you changed the frequency to 106 or whatever, I cannot get you. So therefore, when I phone, I can't listen on the radio while I'm getting through on the phone. Okay, so if I've missed a bit. But just I'd like to say a point on that, on Farage and the promises that he made on Brexit. Let's be fair, Farage made all those promises. However, he had no power whatsoever to implement any of them. It was left to the people largely who were against Brexit to formulate the rules and the agreement to leave. Hello?
Yeah, still here. Yes, no, that's it. Yeah.
Sorry.
It's okay.
I shocked you too much. Okay, I say you had no power. Normally, people, like, there's something comes up, you vote for it, and that's represented by a party, and the party then get in and try and do it, or don't do it, or whatever. But I say with Brexit, nobody in power was going to support Brexit and bring it about. They all had to be like volunteers that were pressed into it. Okay, it's just my point.
Thanks very much for the call.
Okay.
Thanks very much for your call in there. And yes, here we go, another caller on the line, 95278 4000. Morning, caller, you're live on TRE.
Morning, Giles, it's Alf again.
Aha, Alf.
And I'm not biting on Gary saying, why are you defending the Labour Party? You only defend things if you think there's something to defend.
Ooh.
You know, they're just doing a job. And if you don't like what they're doing, well, so be it. If you want me to justify some of what they're doing, I could make an attempt. But just remember, because I'm in a political party, doesn't mean that I agree with everything that's done. I'm also a member of PSOE. I don't agree with many of the things that Sanchez has been doing. It doesn't stop me from being, you know, having a view as a socialist that I want this sort of world for my kids and my grandkids to grow up in. And it doesn't mean to say that you have to, because a political party has said something, that you have to defend it to the hilt. If that were true, you know, Corbyn would never have come to the fore. And
well, that's what we're seeing. That's what we're seeing in the States, isn't it? About the whole thing at the moment. You know, you are 100% MAGA, and that is it.
Yeah, or you're opposed to me, which is absolute nonsense. Because I don't suppose that everybody, I don't suppose that 50% of America who voted for Trump agree with everything that Trump is saying. I don't think that for one moment. And they will have a view and a voice. It's like John said, unfortunately, with politics, it is about involvement. You know, I've always said, you know, use your vote. If we do nothing else, use your vote. Yeah, if you want to do other things, you know, going to political meetings, watching paint dry, as they used to say. I used to go to union meetings as well, and if you think, you know, political meetings are boring, you should go to union meetings. So it's all about commitment. So when somebody says something, you know, I was a member of the Labour Party, I talked to my neighbours, I went to a meeting, I relayed what my neighbours were saying to my local MP, who usually was at the meeting. So I say usually, unless he had a commitment in the House or something else.
Right.
And that's where they pick up a view. Plus, if you've got a half-decent MP, they will have a network of connection people, not necessarily Labour Party people either, just a network of people around their constituency, you know, groups of people they talk to, old-age pensioners, British Legion, local working man's clubs, things like that. Most decent MPs will do the rounds and talk to those people, and that's where they pick up the views that they then try to express through Parliament. But at the end of the day, you know, remember, you are electing an individual, and it's an individual who exercises their vote. And Claudio, you know, I'll repeat it again. The Labour Party got into power with 32%, I think it was 32%, maybe 1 or 2% more, of the vote, of the popular vote. That's it. So, to be honest, when they all come up and say, oh, we voted for Labour and we're not voting for them again, it's really, are you talking to the 68% or are you talking to the 32%? Or are you talking to representatives of the 32% who fell out because they were Labour, they voted for the first time in their lives to vote Labour because they didn't? You know, if there were all these people, swarms of people who were voting Labour, why did they only get 32% of the vote? They got less votes than when they lost the election under Corbyn. You know, you have to take politics for real life, not the sound bites and not the rubbish that you see just on the television. So, you know, like I said about, you know, defending the Labour Party, you don't have to defend it. You just go, do you think they're... And overall, you know, 90% I'm going to agree with what the Labour Party are doing, and for 10% of the time, yeah, I'm going to disagree. If they come along and said, which is one of the threats, we're going to do away with a triple lock, I'm going to be the first to complain. because I benefit from the triple lock. I've always benefited. When the Tories brought it in, it was the best thing. Remembering that for 25 years before, pensioners were falling further and further and further behind the population of the UK.
Alf, can you not argue that? But it's the comms. It's the comms office, because they're just not hitting the bases, and they should be doing. And whoever is doing, and they're doing the social media as reform do, and this is the problem, because the narratives have been skewed. You've got a right wing press who are going to go, look, Angela Rayner's got a new flat or whatever, and whoever is doing the comms for Labour, Starmer should be out there absolutely knocking this into the park, saying we are Labour, this is what we stand for. It is not that, not we are harder than Farage and him.
They should get the guy. And never mind about people going, oh, Farage says this. And Farage said very little in the Brexit stuff. Yes, of course he was, populist on the TV and that. Remember what Johnson did. He was the guy who said, here's the bus, look at what's on the side of the bus. He was the guy who was leading the fray. Cameron, by the way, remember, the Tory party leader who was saying, vote in favour of Europe. I'm going to stay to the bitter end. 2 days later, I lost my vote, so I'm leaving. They're all, in one way or the other, you have to judge these people by what they are. Johnson was doing the job for the Brexiteers. Farage, he was using him. So it's the first time you can say that. So Farage wasn't
Don't rewrite history there, Alf.
Farage wasn't using Johnson. Farage wasn't in front of the bus.
Johnson was in front of the bus. Was the seed that planted Brexit?
Absolutely
the
not. UKIP. UKIP was the seed. Farage happened to be the leader of UKIP. UKIP were, remember, UKIP Farage were the dissidents the from the Tories.
That planted the idea of Brexit as a solution of all the problems in the UK.
No, UKIP was the dissident Tories who couldn't get the Tory party to agree to have a referendum to leave Europe. Not Farage. Farage wasn't in the Tory party. He wasn't in any political party. So the Tories who were in the Tory party couldn't get the Tory party to agree to have a vote on leaving Europe. So they left in their droves and formed UKIP, and Farage jumped on that bandwagon. Stop giving him some platform that he doesn't deserve. He's not a top politician. Never has been a top politician.
So Farage had nothing to do with Brexit, no? It was Johnson.
I didn't say Farage wasn't nothing to do with it. I said he wasn't the lead. He wasn't the lead. He wasn't the lead on Brexit.
He was the lead.
No, Johnson was the lead from the Tory party. Johnson was leading the dissident Tories in UKIP.
Selected memory, because Johnson was pro-European to start with, and then he changed.
Really? So he didn't stand in front of the bus saying, this is how much money we're going to save on the NHS. That wasn't Johnson. You should go back to watching the television properly and watching what people do.
Yeah, picture of a bus with Johnson in front. The one who planted the seed in
Johnson,
Brexit.
It was
started
three,
a long time
three
ago.
Ex-Tories.
I was in the UK in 2012. I used to listen about the European Union have to leave and everything. And it was Farage who was leading the herd on that one.
In the meantime.
No.
Yes, it was.
Hang on. Gary's going to be very, very happy, because I'm actually pulling the fader down on other people at the moment. Right then.
And Andrew, one last thing. You said we spent years trying to stop migration. The UK has never spent a minute trying to stop migration. Not one. It's the biggest, has the most migrants in Europe. It's had it for centuries. So we've never tried to stop migration. What has been attempted to do is to control migration. Britain can't survive without migration. What the big issue is, was it 3% of the problem? The boat people, who make it this big publicity, 3% of illegal immigrants who come in on a boat. The rest of them come in on planes, they come in on student visas. I've said, I don't know how many times I've been on the radio saying, look at the number of Indian students that come in, bringing their families, who never return back
Claudio
to India.
Claudio is warming up here, hang on, because he comes in on a yacht. Right, Claudio?
Well, it's interesting, the Brexit debate bores me, because it's been over 10 years of a broken record, so I'd rather not continue with it, because it's, for me, it's old
Gary
news,
agrees with
and,
you, by
and
the way,
I'd rather talk about more current things. things. But I do think the Labour Party's new stance is correct, and the appointment of Shabana Mahmood as Home Secretary, her main mission is to try and reduce, because it's impossible to stop it, reduce illegal immigration. And she has said she's going to do whatever it takes, and we'll see how that goes with all the legal challenges. But it's not only her. In Denmark, the socialist government have done the same. They've also reduced migration, and I think it's something correct. They're not being populist, or they're just seeing that it is a problem that needs to be addressed, and you can't shut down people that have concerns about it, because they know that even within their own voters they are people that are concerned about migration, and that it needs to be regulated, not stopped, but it does need to be regulated. So I do think it is very necessary, and many parties, both left and right in Europe, are realizing that it is important to do something about asylum and migration, because it's people are concerned about it from different sides of the political spectrum, and you can't just keep shutting down the debate and saying, oh, people who are concerned are this and the other, and it's just not working, and they know it's not working. So I think it is important that the issue is tackled, that there is a strong policy towards it, and that the debate can be open, that one can have a healthy debate about migration without people becoming too losing their
collective minds.
Right. Yeah.
I'm going to have to go to a break now, because we're into the last 5 minutes and I'm getting so carried away with that, and my finger twitching over the faders. Alf?
Your finger's always twitching.
Yes, I know.
According to Gary.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Alf, good to hear from you.
Cheers.
Cheers,
Claudia. Cheers, Andreas.
Yes, indeed, Andreas. Right, then, take a quick break in the back for the last, believe it or not, 4 minutes of Viewpoint.
Viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe with Giles Brown.
We're back for the final 3 minutes. Right, so I'm going to go through some bits and pieces just quickly. Okay, cost of living, milk, eggs and cheese up 4%, meat up 47%, excuse me, meat 35%, oil and butter 60%, cereal and bread 34%, fruit 26%, vegetables 35%, plus extortionate energy costs. Brits don't have the money to spend abroad, all because of Brexit, of course. It doesn't help, there's another one, when every media organisation gives a perpetual platform, like that, perpetual platform to Farage and Reform. Almost non-stop coverage, also that Labour are doing all they can to ape Reform. There's a primate in the jungle, ape Reform. Thus driving all their natural voters to Lib Dems or Greens. Absolute rubbish, Claudio. Typical fascist trope, othering. Our problems are nothing to do with immigration and everything to do with a massive wealth imbalance. I'm getting in my soapbox, I'm standing in it. Cool, I can't take your call, it's going to be very quick. Also, Nigel Farage thanks Sam. Nigel Farage's role in Brexit is quite significant. He's often associated with the movement to keep the European Union, to leave the European Union, and his contributions were pivotal in shaping the campaign. Farage was a prominent leader of the Leave campaign, focusing on issues like immigration, sovereignty, and Britain's independence from the EU. He led the UK Independence Party, UKIP, from 2006 to 2009, and from 2010 to 2016, and later founded the Brexit Party, now Reform UK. Farage's slogan, "Let's take back control," became iconic, encapsulating the Leave's message. He's now a key figure in UK populist politics, influenced debates on migration and national sovereignty. It might be a bit too much, says my source, but that's good to have you with us. Right, almost out of time. He said, breathing heavily. We didn't even get onto paracetamol. Next time, we'll have to talk about, you know, paracetamol, because there's some more work.
I'm going to have to take a paracetamol after this program.
Paracetamol after this one.
But thank you very much for the invite, my supreme friend.
My supreme Giles. Friend. I think we call a supreme friend.
I never use the expression supreme friend, no. Claudia.
No.
Well, there you go. Nobody I know that has used the expression supreme friend.
Maybe Dr. Spock. And
I'm going to call Alf my supreme friend as well.
if you were friends with Diana Ross the Supremes, would that be your supreme Supremes fan? Friend.
You could be a supreme Supremes fan.
Exactly.
Yes.
Or a supreme, yes. We're getting out of control here. Right then, it's been a privilege and a pleasure to present today's show. Thanks, it's been good to be back in the hot seat. My thanks to my guests today, Claudio De Torre, strong, silent as always, and in tennis gear.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure as always, and thank you for everyone for listening.
And standing for his new political party, Andrés Gallardo. Vote Andrés. He'll be balloting in a constituency near you very, very soon indeed.
Yeah, the EA team. Thank you, Giles.
Indeed. And thanks to all of you for your messages in as well. I'll be back tomorrow in my normal guise, whatever that is, with Let's Talk. Thanks for the calls and the messages in. Stephen Ritson is up next. Have a great rest of your Tuesday. I'll see you tomorrow morning at 10. News is up next.
See you. Have a good luck.
Expressed on Viewpoint by invited studio guests and callers do not constitute opinion endorsed in any way by Talk Radio Europe.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this program, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.